welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. So this channel is quite close to my heart because I train coaches in embodiment. I mean, why? Because if you don't work with the body, you're missing a lot. Whether you're a coach, a therapist, facilitator, whatever, that's how you go deep quickly. That's how you do stuff that's sticky. We have to take the body into account. This channel is sponsored by Dylan Newcombe and Uzazu Embodied Intelligence. Dylan is a genius, quite simply put, and I wouldn't say that about many people in this field. I've been studying with Dylan for, God, the first time was probably 10 years ago in the Netherlands. He speaks fluent Dutch, by the way, as well as Korean and a few other languages. What I love about Dylan is his ability to make models of things, looking at how embodiment works. His system, Uzazu, U-Z-A-Z-U, is really all about state shifting. So I think of him as the sort of master of state changing, how we can shift our state, our client's state, and how we can develop ourselves through those different ways of being. So I think for coaches and therapists, it's like easy to learn, practical toolkit. I've used it myself over the years. So if you want a 3-day online training with Dylan, then look at the link below, or you can go to Uzazu, uzazu.org. And even easier, he's got an embodied assessment there you can do as well. We all love doing these little tests about ourselves, but this is an embodied one. So there you go. Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. I'm going to be on this one a lot just because there's lots of cool people on here. Lots of people, I think, you know, well worth a listen. Embodiment in facilitation is so necessary. So from me to you, welcome.
Lee Staggles is an embodiment coach and men's work leader who helps men achieve their goals, overcome obstacles, and make positive changes in their lives. Before starting to support men, Lee worked for 20 years in the tire industry, then went on to work for local authorities, helping police, social services, and members of the public from within the domestic abuse team. Lockdown saw a change of direction again, and Lee is now hosting and facilitating online groups in men's work and storytelling. Lee has recently been a room manager for the Embodiment Facilitator course, but I think for me, he's one of the royal family of the embodiment team. He's an extraordinary outdoorsman, fantastic with slingshot, great with sword practice, spends time, a lot of time with his granddaughter. And if we could find Iron John, I think he'd look pretty much like him. Lee, I'm delighted you're in the spotlight with me today. It's yours, and I'm looking forward to your storytelling.
Thank you. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you for joining me today. So I'll give a brief outline of the session. It's going to start with a guided listening meditation, followed by a story, The Singing Bone from the Grimm Brothers. We'll have a guided reflection straight afterwards, and then I'll be opening it up to the audience. There'll be a series of there's a series of questions that are already set, where you'll get a chance to rank them through the wonder of the Zoom technology, and then we'll take an embodied exploration into different aspects of the story. The reason that I wanted to combine coaching, storytelling, and men's work on this particular presentation session was to showcase the relationships between the three of those and how I and others use them in the field of men's work to improve who we are as men. So without further ado, first thing I'd like to do is invite us to breathe together. There's some science that says that if we breathe together on camera, we can con our brains into thinking we're in the same actual space as well as the same virtual space. So it's an invitation to take three breaths together. I'll be doing a body movement as well. You don't have to do that. It's to signify the in-breath and the out-breath. So I'm going to stand for this if this works on the camera, which it does. That's great. So I'll invite us to breathe out together to start with. And then breathing in, a pause, and out. Breathing in again, pause, breathing out. And for a third time together, breathing in, and out. Great, thank you. And arriving. So without further ado, I'd like to start us off with a brief guided listening meditation. So I'd like to invite you to turn away from your screen. If you feel more comfortable doing so, maybe even close your eyes. Breathing, if we can, into the belly and seeing if we can make the out-breath slightly longer than the in-breath. An invitation to allow our bodies to be a bit more at ease, whatever at ease may mean for you. It might mean moving our feet wherever they may be. Maybe a cushion if we're sitting or lying. See if we need to move our head at all to make us a bit more at ease. Now I'd like to invite you to listen. Listen to the sounds that are the furthest away from you. What's the furthest thing that you can hear? Taking that in. And listening now to the sounds that are close to you, maybe in the room even. And now, can you hear both at once? There's going to be a short story. And listening to the story. And noticing anything that may happen in our body as we hear the story. Certain parts, certain characters. I'm going to ring a bell and then I'll start the story. We are leaving our time now. We are leaving our time now. We're going to a certain time in a certain place. In this certain place, there was a boar wreaking havoc in the land, churning up the fields, killing the cattle, taking the lives of the people with its large tusks. The king of this land proclaimed anyone who could rid the land of the boar would be handsomely rewarded. No one came forward. There was so much fear, fear to enter the forest where the boar lived. Eventually, the king declared that anyone who could rid the land, anyone who could kill or capture the boar, would receive his only daughter's hand in marriage. She would be their wife. Now in this land, there were two brothers, sons of a poor man, and they said that they would take on this dangerous task. The older brother was cunning and wise, and he came from a place of arrogance and self. The younger was naive and innocent, and was driven only by the love in his heart. They went to the king, and the king said, if you want to catch this boar, I suggest that you go into the forest from different sides. That's what they did. The older brother went to the west and the younger to the east. The younger man had not been in the woods for long when he came across a small man carrying a black spear. The man said to him, I will give you this spear because of the innocence in your heart. It will help you kill the boar. It will work for sure. And you will come to no harm. The young man took the boar and said, thank you. And walked on into the woods with the spear on his shoulder. He didn't have to walk very much further before the beast revealed itself. The beast was angry and charged at him. The man stood fast, held the spear. The boar was so full of rage, It powered towards the man and it landed with its heart on the spear and cut its heart in two. The man picked up the boar and put it on his shoulder and carried on walking. When he got to the other side of the woods, just as he was coming out, he came to a tavern where people were having fun, dancing and drinking. Among them was his older brother. That scoundrel hadn't gone in the woods. He was in there drinking. He'd thought to himself, the boar's not going anywhere fast. I'll have a drink and raise my courage. When he saw his younger brother with the boar over his shoulder coming out of the woods, his envious heart took him. He called out, oh, brother, brother, come in, sit down, drink. Let us celebrate your victory. The innocent man went along and sat and drank and told his brother about the little man and the spear and the boar. And they stayed there until nightfall. When it was dark, they left. They continued walking. They came to a narrow bridge. The older brother said, oh, you go in front. And so he did. When he was halfway across the bridge, his older brother struck him so hard on the head that he fell dead. The murderer took the body and buried it in the bank under the bridge, picked the boar up himself, and went to the king. I killed the boar, he said, but I don't know what happened to my brother. The king, true to his word, arranged the marriage of the brother to his daughter. There was a celebration and they lived happily. A short while after, the people were still asking about the younger brother. And the older brother said, oh, he must have been savaged by the boar. Oh, my poor brother. And everyone believed him. Now, nothing escapes the eye of God. And several years later, there was a shepherd walking through the fields and the woods and came across this bridge. And as he was walking over, he looked down and he saw the white shining thing in the bank and thought to himself, oh, I'll go down, that may be useful. He climbed down and he pulled out a bone, which he took home and carved as a mouthpiece for his horn. When he blew into the mouthpiece, he was amazed. It began to sing by itself. Shepherd, blow your horn and play me. Let my voice be heard once more. Since my brother chose to slay me, bury me and steal the boar. He did this vile and cruel thing to wed the daughter of the king. What an amazing mouthpiece. I must take this to the king, the shepherd said. And so he did. And when he did and blew into it again, he sang the same song. The king was no fool. He knew what must have happened. And he ordered for the bank of the river to be dug up. There they discovered the bones of a man, every bone except one. The older brother could no longer deny what had gone on. And he, by order of the king, was sewn into a sack and drowned in the same stream where he'd buried his brother. As for the younger man's bones, they were collected and laid in a grave in a beautiful churchyard. Returning to our time now. Returning to our time, wherever we may be. An invitation to move slightly. We've been sitting or laying, listening. Maybe start with the and the anger. ankles and grow some movement, an invitation maybe to stand or to sit straighter, to stretch. Welcome back, if you're back with us. If you have had your eyes closed, I suggest opening your eyes away from the screen before we turn back to the screen. An invitation, if anybody else wants to join us in the main room, if you're here. I think it's as simple as raising your electronic hand, coming into the room. Okay. So the story. Cram-packed full, I love these stories. What I wanted to do with the story, an invitation for you to take part, was to look at the characters in the story and maybe go into their journey from an embodied perspective. So I think there's some questions that have already that are already there. If you go to the Q&A section, you'll find the questions are there. Look at this. Yes, what character, what does that say? What character you need more of? Yes, so which of the characters should we go into there? Oh no, what does that say on the screen? No, those aren't my questions. No. That's okay. So I can tell you what the questions are. I don't know if we've got people in the space to rank them even. So there we go.
That's the one.
It's interesting the most. Sorry, Michael, Matthew.
All good.
Cool. Yeah. So if you wanted to get onto that Q&A thing, you can see we've listed there the characters in the story, going from the boar, the king, the two brothers, the small man, the man with the small spear, and the shepherd. And without anybody ranking them, we can just go from top to bottom and maybe get through a couple of them.
It looks like the boar is the winner so far.
Oh, do we have some? I can't see that on my screen.
Yeah, boar at the top, followed by the king. Oh, no, sorry. The younger brother followed by the king, then the shepherd, the older brother, and without any votes, the old man.
Yeah, get that a lot. So, yeah, the character of the boar, the story tells us a wild boar digging up the land, killing the cattle and taking the people's lives. The story, I read the story in a translation of the Grimm Tales, collected at the start of the 19th century. So these wild boars probably did live in some woods and probably did wreak some havoc in the local villages. I think the story probably means the boar is more than this. The boar could represent something else that was going on in the land. And there's something with these stories that I learned from Carl Jung and some of his students, that we can look at these stories as if every character in the story is an aspect of ourselves. So the theory is that we have a wild boar inside of us, as well as us having the other characters, the king and the two brothers. So if we look at it from the perspective of the wild boar, the wild boar, the story tells us, is raging and causing havoc. And I can recognize there's certainly been a wild boar in me, and maybe still is sometimes. And I'd like to ask if maybe there's a wild boar in you, or has been at some times, how might that boar present itself in our bodies? I can do this standing. An invitation to stand and take part if you wish as well. How may a wild boar manifest ourselves in our bodies? We can think in our minds of the things that we may have done, some of the behaviors that we may have had in our past, and maybe even our presence that could be associated with the acts of a wild boar. So the wild boar was tearing up the land. So when I'm thinking about the character, I have a tension. I have a tension in my body and in my chest. And my arms seem to want to do this. I don't know if they're breaking something together or they're pulling something apart. There's a wild boar that's churning up land. So I'm getting a forward, chaotic, making a mess around the place. And of course, the people are afraid of this wild boar. Have you ever experienced people being afraid of you? And how might that feel? What might we do with our bodies if someone were to say, hey, I'm a bit scared of you? Or how might it be if we get a sense that they're scared? If somebody is in fear, they may back away. They may look down in our presence. The character of the boar that's inside of me. The boar in our story is full of so much rage that it directs itself straight to the younger man who's holding a spear. We could maybe call it blind rage. Maybe the boar doesn't see the spear point that eventually, through the force of the boar, pierces his own heart. It's a bit of a heavy character, the boar, when we take it, it's certainly heavy for me when I take it on for myself. If anybody's got any feedback in the chat, that would be really useful. In the meantime, an invitation to maybe shake this boar out. Have a shake. A nice a calming breath. If we have experience of a calming breath, for me, it's a breath into my lower body. And an out breath through pursed lips. Can see on the screen some of the people showing some hand movements as well. I'll replicate those. Yeah. The wild boar. Yeah. We can move on fairly swiftly. We might get through a few of these. That would be useful. What was ranked second, Matthew, please?
The younger brother.
The younger brother, the innocent one, the story tells us. The naive one, the story tells us. The pure of heart. He, in the story, he goes along with his brother. And he does it from the goodness of his heart. So when have you been the younger brother? Maybe you've actually been a younger brother in your family. Maybe you still are. The story tells us that there's a younger brother inside of us. That there's some part in us that goes along with. Again, I can recognize that in myself. Can you recognize this character in you? He goes along into the woods as directed and walking along, and he meets the old man who gives him a tool. Remember, the story tells us he's innocent and naive. Does he believe that this tool is going to work? I think so. Have you taken advice from someone believing that it was going to work? Our story tells us it does. And in the younger brother's journey through this story, he's innocent, naive and pure of heart, and he takes a spear, a black spear, from an old man, and he believes that it's going to work. It's not going to do him any harm. And he goes and he faces this thing that has been wreaking havoc. And he stands. One of the first times I read through this story, I had an image of young men going to war, being told this is the thing to do, being told this is the right thing to do, believing. And for him, it worked. He kills a boar. And after that, he's still described as naive. The story never tells us that he ever gets out of that naivety. He goes and drinks with his brother. Goes along, yeah, yeah, and tells him all about it. He takes the invitation to go in front on the bridge. The story of the younger man. There's something in his what I perceive stoicity, where he's steadfast with this spear. I try and imagine what it would be like for a boar to be raging towards me. And I think he's kneeling down. I think he may be on his knee. Can we do this with the camera? Look at this, making the tech guys work. He does this, I think, on his knees. He's holding something here. He's holding something here and waiting, and he's steadfast. It reminds me of a posture from the Embodied Yoga Principles series, the entering into, that's firm and purposeful and stoic. It's on a firm base. It's definite, it's forwards, this younger brother. An invitation to take this posture if you wish and see how it feels. So it's 1 foot straight out in front with the front leg bent. And the rear foot is slightly at an angle. And we have a stable base. And the front arm is straight out ahead. The shoulders are square on. This one we call entering into. It's a focused gaze. This is how I think the young man is when he's holding the spear. So the invitation from me, from an embodiment perspective, would be, how familiar is this to you? And if you were to say very familiar, then maybe change it a little bit. Do we go too far forwards? And if we say unfamiliar, maybe there's an invitation to practice this a little bit more, to develop some range. The story tells us that after he's killed the boar, he throws it over his shoulder, and walks through the woods. I think if I were the younger brother, I might have some pride in my achievement. I think as he's walking through the woods, he carries a wild boar. I think they're pretty heavy. He's carrying a great victory, I think. So maybe he's standing straight and he has some pride. I can see someone on the screen with his arm up here. Yes. There's some pride in him now as he's walking through to carry the boar to the king. I think the younger brother kills the boar to rid the land of the boar. And I think the older brother wants the king's daughter, wants the prize, wants the reward at the end. It's the difference between the two. Are both of those characters in you? The story says they might be, in varying degrees. The younger brother meets his older brother, and he sits with him and he tells him about his adventure. He tells him about how he conquered the boar, about how the small man gave him the tool he needed, about how he learned from an older man what to do and trusted in that, trusted in the man and the process and the tools that he was given. And then, of course, we could call him the hero of the story. The hero dies. It's in most hero stories. It's in the journeys through archetypes. We're told that the hero must die for the warrior to be born. The hero is the last of the immature male archetypes. And this story fulfills that aspect. Has anybody else on the screen, how is this in the body? We're hearing this stuff. How does it land, this younger brother, this naive aspect of ourselves? The one that must be heroic or yearns for heroism. And then that part of us is killed for us to reach maturity. I can see a question on the screen.
Yeah, it's been answered by one of the attendees. Janina. Was the princess on the list? She wasn't. We've got the next one down is the shepherd on the list.
Great. Oh, thank you. Thank you. So the shepherd character, I think, is very interesting. The shepherd's the character that gets me to expose my singing voice. That's one thing about the shepherd. But the shepherd for me in the story is a character who spends a lot of his time alone in his working life with his animals, spends a lot of time outside in nature, spends a lot of time walking around. And the story tells us that he goes over the bridge and he notices this shiny white thing and he thinks, oh, that might be useful. Is there a character in you that does that? Is there a character in you that walks along and notices shiny things and finds them useful? I've got a nod from the tech team here at the conference headquarters. Yeah, there's a bit of that in me as well. I've just spotted myself on the screen, which is just next to the camera, and I'm doing this. And it's close to another EYP pose, which is called curiosity. There's something of a curiosity in the shepherd. There's something of it in what I perceive is his life style that does that. It allows him to look around. Maybe an invitation for the curiosity pose. You can do this. EYP, there's lots of this embodied yoga principles available on YouTube, by the way. It's one of Mark's creations. So the curiosity pose is forwards and dabbling into, taking an interest in, looking around, being curious of, oh, what could this be? What could this be? I think the shepherd's doing that. The curiosity pose. Or someone on the screen, I see myself as the wandering shepherd. You feel like you've lit up with this role? Okay, thank you. Yeah, I do enjoy the shepherd. I do enjoy the shepherd. He finds a bone and thinks it might be useful, so he takes it home and carves it into a mouthpiece for his horn. Yeah, like you do. There's something in the character of the shepherd that, yeah, I do really enjoy. And I think the shepherd's embodiment is one of relaxed curiosity. And then, of course, he's a tinkerer, he's a fixer, he's a maker. There's something for me in the shepherd's hands, the way that he can create something that he finds in the ground. And the shepherd also knows when he hears the song, he knows what to do with it. And he's quite excited. Oh, what a wonderful mouthpiece. It sings by itself. I'll have to take this to the king. Looking, searching, dabbling, what a great name, what a great word. Yeah, yeah, the shepherd's a bit of a dabbler. I keep doing this, don't I? I'm noticing this. There's definitely a hands thing going on when we're in the shepherd. And I'm also noticing that I'm forwards. I've got my back heel off the ground. There's a really getting into this shepherd character. And we probably ought to shake it off and move on to the next one because we've got 10 minutes or so. So I'll see if I can shake my shepherd off. What was next on the list, Matthew, please? I don't have that in front of me.
The king, the sovereign, king.
King, the sovereign, yes. What a, yeah. We might be able to finish the king, we might not. The king's a big character in this. The king in me and the king in you. The one that knows what to do. The one that's ultimately responsible. The king tries to get away with just spending some money. You'll be richly rewarded if you can rid the place of the boar. Tries to get away with it, but no one takes him up on it. So eventually, the king has to give away the thing that is the most precious thing to him. The king has to give away everything he has because it's the right thing for him to do because he's the king. He's the one that has to protect everybody. He's the one that has to make this ultimate sacrifice. He has to give away his daughter, the ultimate sacrifice for the king. So the king is containing everything as a character. And I like his style, the way that he says, well, I'll give you a load of money. You can have wealth and riches. Go on, have wealth and riches. No one takes him up on it. So then he has to give away the thing that is the most precious. The king's the authority figure. The king's in charge. I am the king. I will proclaim that anyone who can rid the land of this beast will be rewarded. And then we also see him when he speaks to the brothers. He advises. The king is an advisor. The king says, if you really want to get this boar, you should enter the woods from different directions. And the brothers, of course, take the advice because we take the advice of a king. We hope to have leaders who are trustworthy. Yeah, there's a comment there, the same way that women give their son. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that could very well be. So the king, he disappears in the middle of the story, but when he enters again and he hears the song, he knows what must have happened. He knows what must have happened. And then he orders this awful thing to be done to this brother as a punishment. And the story, there's more than one way of hearing it. The story could have a disregard for his daughter, who's been married for all these years to this brother, and we don't know what else has gone on between them. He knows the right thing to do. The story says that nothing escapes the eye of God. We can call that karma. We could say what goes around comes around. We can say as soon as we find out these things, as soon as we find out that things weren't as we thought they were, the king makes a decisive move. So the king, in the end, again holds the authority. How does your king do? In the body, when I think of the king, I think of containing, holding on to the stuff that's important to me inside. And I think of the authority of the king, how the king may stand. Now the king makes his declarations. And of course, the king sacrifices. Should we try one of those? Should we try one of those poses? There's a couple in there. There is the containment pose, this thing. How much are you holding on to? What are your responsibilities? The king's in charge of the fields and the farms and the crops and the cattle and the people. The king's holding on to all of this in the story. What are we containing? What is it that we're responsible for? Are we if when we do this, are we out here? Are we containing? Are we holding on to a big heavy load of shopping? Are we able to contain it all? Can we get all this stuff in here? An invitation to try it, which one feels the most familiar? And then the authority, the king's authority. This would be the authority pose, declaring, looking down slightly, as kings must. How is the king in you? Would the killing king in you finally declare that you're prepared to give your most precious thing to get rid of the boar? How hard would that be? The king. This is a really short presentation. We can go much deeper into each of the characters. My attempt is to give a feel of these things in the story. We've got some comments on here. Sounds like the boar has raised his head again. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the boar can be in there. That character that goes through, can the boar can take different shapes through. I'd like to know more about the daughter. Yeah, I'm not sure we hit the daughter in this story too much. My understanding of the story of the daughter is that she is the most valuable thing that the king has. I think the story tells us that because he starts off offering wealth, and when that doesn't work, finally he offers. So I think in this particular story, the daughter is an example of the king's most precious thing. In other stories, we hear the daughter and half the kingdom to go together. So I think the story is trying to tell us the value that the king places on his daughter as being so high. I do. 10:43, I've got. How are we doing for time, Matthew?
On point. Yeah, we're good. We're good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Got time for plenty of time for Q&A. You've got 10 minutes for Q&A.
We do that. Yeah, I'm good for that. Shall we open up some Q&A? Let's have a look on here. Consent from the daughter. Yeah. It'd be nice, wouldn't it? If only these fairy stories were written in this century, I think they'd be written quite differently. Someone's saying that it's a real big thing to give up a daughter. Yeah. Yeah. I would say it is. I have a daughter and a granddaughter. And yeah, would I give them up? I'm not sure that I would. It'd have to be very special circumstance, very special. I think I'd rather give myself up first. So yeah, I think the story tells us that that's the burden that the king has. The king has that burden where maybe if he could have sacrificed himself, maybe he would. But who wants an old king when you can give away something as precious as a daughter? We can write some new stories. Yeah. Yeah, we can. We can. My understanding of the stories are that they're much older than the time they were written down. And they become condensed and condensed. This story is about 5 minutes long. And if we chose to, we could probably spend a weekend, maybe even a week, unpacking it as to what the meanings of the stories may be. Some of the stories are very deep, and some have been written about extensively as well. Matthew, at the start of this, talked about the story of Iron John, Iron Hans, another grim story. It's so packed full of stuff. Speaks down which one needs to sacrifice. Yes. Thank you, yeah. Speaks to how much one needs to sacrifice for a kingdom, for sure.
In the Q&A box, there's a question. This seems to be a very masculine archetypal story. Well, you're talking about men's work in this piece. Do you know of other stories that has mainly female archetypes or those with a balanced mix of archetypes?
Kind of.
You know, okay.
That's kind of a really huge story. The people that study the stories, one of my favorite teachers, Robert Bly, said that he studied hundreds of fairy stories, and he found very few that were actually for men. You can check his work out via Google. Yeah. The way that I like to understand the stories is that this story has got more male characters than female characters, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's about men. It could be that it's about the masculine that's inside all of us, man and woman. And I think this deals with more of the masculine side of our characters, where one of the feminine stories, Little Red Riding Hood, would deal with more of the feminine side of our characters. Although both these two stories contain naivety, one from a more masculine perspective and one from a more feminine perspective, both of which are contained in all of us, is my belief. I hope that answers your question.
Janina Tekos has pointed us as a book that I know and love, Women Who Run With the Wolves. Clarissa Estes, who I tried to get on this conference, but that unpacks so many of those stories. She talks about bone in those stories as being archetypal of a soul level. If you dig up a barrow that's 5,000 years old, you'll find bones, and there's some evidence that that's representative in stories as a part that can't be destroyed. There is a part that's there under the bridge that can be found again and can tell the story and can be refleshed and invoked again. But the book is a super way. She unpacks the stories really quite elegantly. So that's a good reference point.
Yeah, that's one of my, I also like that book, and I have a favorite story from that book too. And as she talks about the bone, that fits with our story as well.
Yeah.
And he finds a bone underneath and it tells its own story. Yeah, there's something in that. I recommend all the storytelling books, by the way. Get into it.
Oh, yeah, no question about that.
Someone's asking for the name of that book. Oh, the book that this has come from. This story I took from a book of translation by Philip Pullman. Philip Pullman translated the Grimm stories. I don't have the title of the book in my head, though. I'm sorry.
I think Ginny's going to try and find it for you. How would you, what phase in a piece of men's work would you, in your courses that you do, where would you carry somebody through these kinds of old metaphor? Where would you place them? How would you guide somebody through invoking these archetypes, connecting with them and understanding their piece? How is this woven into your work?
Okay, thank you. That's a good question. Sometimes it could be the entry point for a man to come into the work via a storytelling group, by hearing a story and have an aspect of the story resonate with him. And that may induce the contact with me. And we may be exploring the story right from the very start and the characters within the story. And sometimes it may be, we may have already had some sessions to do with something else that the man might bring, and I may bring a story in. There's a way of using a story as a narrative for the character that we can then translate as a narrative for ourselves. And if we're using story and we're using narrative, there's a way of using ourselves in the third person to tell a story about, which can make it easier to get into some of our past and some of our behaviors. If I were to talk about Lee, as opposed to talk about I have a slight removal from that. So sometimes we can use these stories and clients can resonate. I really do feel for the king in this. There's something of a king in me because of this, 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 and this. And we can step into how that may have been for the client.
I'm afraid I didn't see Laura's question, but I do see it now, and I think you've kind of answered that. Does this dance of archetypes infuse into your life, recognizing which character you are embodying, or maybe a role you want to bring through for a certain reason? I think you just answered that.
Yeah, I think I did. Yes, and yes, absolutely. And a new story will do this for me as well. I heard a story last weekend that I haven't heard for a decade, and it moved me so differently. So differently, the place I was in 10 years ago, and then hearing the story again very recently, my response to it in my body was very different, and the way that I related to the characters had also moved. Stories can be useful for me like that, and yeah, sometimes I'd like to think that I'd always want to embody the king in the relevant circumstances. And I'd also like to think that I can recognize when there's a ball coming up in me. Yeah, thank you for the question.
Mm. Thank you, Laura. I had a sanglier, a French wild boar, charge me for not even a second. A whole lot of piglets came across a path I was running along through some woods. Terrifying seconds. Not even, I wouldn't have been seconds. She headed towards me for a moment and then took off with the piglets. About 150 kilos of animal. That's intense. So there's quite something to hold a spear through naivety, but to be able to hold that pose and persist in that.
I feel for your experience. I haven't had a wild boar charge at me. I don't think I'd be very happy with it.
I'm turning
a different way. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. We've got a little bit more time. There's another question that's alive for somebody. I would still encourage that. I think there's a lot in storytelling and myth that we've missed out on this age, I think. Another question. Read the story. Is this a kingdom of our own lives?
Throwing it back, is it a kingdom of your life? So the question asker. Maybe, I think, is the answer. If we choose to see it this way. Jung's theory was, yes, every story is about us and every character and every aspect. So is your kingdom being churned up by the wild boar inside of you? Would be a question I might ask. Is there a way of getting the old man in you to advise the young naive one in you? There's another question that could be asked. Where's the shepherd? So, yeah, I think the story could be a representation of the kingdom inside all of us.
I agree.
Potentially, I saw something on the screen there about the boar could be social norms. The boar could also be the story of the kingdom in which we live in. That could be our community, our town, our city, our country, the world. Depending which way we want to take it, within the one-to-one coaching, I would be encouraging the client to see the story as being a story of themselves and maybe of their past and maybe something within their history.
Good reflective session. Thank you. Thank you, Lee. I have a thought that's coming from reading Eric Nyman, who to some extent summarized Jung's work to the satisfaction and delight of Jung, but he also talked about the evolution of human consciousness and where we were going. And I'd be curious, not now, unfortunately, at the time, but to know more from you about storytelling and myth and how our myths are evolving and who are the storytellers that allow us to model and move through the world as it changes. But yeah, another time.
Look forward to that.
Thank you so much for bringing your presence and center and storytelling skill to this session. We're going to sort of wrap in a moment, but while I'm doing that, if you could think of your top tip for embodiment, something we're asking all the presenters, and that's more relevant for you in your connection to EYP, in your connection to the embodiment conference and its history. What is your top tip for embodiment that we should all be attentive to?
Okay.
Yeah. Think about it for a moment. If you have an answer, you're welcome to launch. Do you want to tell us your answer?
Either way, I can tell you now or I can wait. Do you want it now?
Yeah, go for it. Bring out the shepherd.
Right. Get to know it. Get to know your body. Get to know your body and love your body as being one of the first steps to get in. Take an interest. That's my top tip for embodiment.
Sounds like exactly the right top tip for a curious, tinkering shepherd that wants to find out and get into what is the nuts and bolts of this? Where are the bones? What's the bones of this? What's the story we're telling with our bones? Thank you, Lee.
Right.
Thank you. That's a great session. It's a great session. Thank you very much.